You guys have so much swag in your bookstore. It's unbelievable. It's like everything you could possibly put.
This is the Fighting Irish pasta.
Did you guys see
those hype?
Yes, I almost bought some.
And the blue and gold M&M's.
Yes, those were over the top. Now you know how it feels.
Yeah.
Pressure's on. This is going to be on the air,
pressure
buddy.
Pressure is on. All right. What have you done to deal with your new popularity? Like in 1997, you couldn't sell out like a 400-seat community theater, but today you're playing to crowds of like 25,000 with Dave Matthews and like 10,000 with Bare Naked Ladies.
It's been a gradual build, so it wasn't like all of a sudden we went from 400 people to 25,000. It was a gradual build, so we got used to it. All of a sudden, 400 turned into 5, 6, and then just slowly built up. So it wasn't a shocker. There are obviously certain steps that you go from playing a club to a ballroom, and a ballroom to a theater, and a theater to a large venue like we did with Dave Matthews, something like that. But in general, we were pretty prepared for each step, so it wasn't shocking. Although it was exciting each time you make that move, you're like, whoa, look at all these people. But no, it wasn't this big surprise like, oh my God, how do we deal with this? It was like, okay, here's the next step, and we're ready for it.
What do you like better? Do you like small clubs and small theaters, or do you like the big Arena Rock or Central Park or something like that?
I think there's advantages to both. I really like playing the small rooms because they're obviously more intimate and you can have more fun and interact more easily with the crowd. But the bigger venues are great too because it's just so huge, and having the big rock and roll ambiance is nice. But actually, it was surprising when we did this last tour with Bare Naked Ladies. We did arenas, and they were actually very intimate, which was surprising to me because I thought, oh God, it's just going to be huge arena rock. How are we even going to translate our music to the back row? But it totally worked.
I thought it sounded good.
The outdoor venues are the hardest ones, I think, actually.
Really?
Because the focus isn't necessarily on the stage. It's nice outside. There's the lawn seats in the back. People start having a picnic. It's not really about the concert.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it is, but when you're the opening act, like for the Dave Matthews, that was actually, I think it was harder to open up for Dave Matthews than it was for Bare Naked Ladies, just because of the venue, not necessarily because of the band and the crowd. But it was summertime, and people are out in the parking lots, and they're doing their parking lot partying. Mm-hmm. And for Bare Naked Ladies, it was an arena, so you're indoors. Even though we were playing at 7:30 at night, it was dark inside, there was lights, it was more of a rock and roll show.
Do you think that you share more fans with Dave Matthews and Bare Naked Ladies, or?
No, I would say it's about the same.
Really?
Yeah, I would say it's about the same.
Same section of Guster fans in the same for each show?
Yeah, well, and I think those two bands are ideal bands for us to be opening up for. I think Dave Matthews was great, and Bare Naked Ladies, I can't think of a better, group of bands that we could open up for.
How about Bob Dylan?
That went well, too, actually. That was good. But obviously, that's a wide range of fans. You have the old Bob Dylan fans and the younger kids trying to check out who he is. He's a living legend.
Yeah.
But it's obviously amazing to be able to say that we shared a stage with them.
What do you think the benefits are of headlining your own shows over opening for a band like Bare Naked Ladies? You guys obviously seem to prefer the headlining gigs over the opening slots, but is that just because you like to see your fans or because of the longer sets that you get to play?
I don't necessarily prefer opening or prefer headline opening. It depends. They each serve their own purpose. Opening, you go out and open up for a band like Bare Naked Ladies to get new fans and to grow. And when that works, which it doesn't always, like we did a tour with Widespread Panic and it was miserable. It was really terrible. It didn't work because they're a jam band and we're not. We're a song-oriented band. So that didn't work. But with Bare Naked, it was great. And I think we have won over a lot of their fans. So opening is awesome because you just show up, you play your 45 minutes, you win over new fans, and you can feel the growth. So that's exciting. Obviously, headlining is a whole other thing, and it's your show, it's your fan base, and that I love as well, obviously, because it's all about you.
Opening for Bare Naked Ladies, how sick are you of 1 week?
Yeah, that was your question. I haven't watched every single one of their shows. I've watched like sections of it, tidbits, because we're done at 8:30 usually. So if we're in some town, we can actually go. We can leave. We can bolt, or there's so much happening backstage that you can just spend your time there. They have a workout room and the DVD player and all this stuff. You're not necessarily watching. I've only watched one full show of theirs, even though we've played almost 20 shows with them now.
How about that versus like Dave Matthews? Did you watch more of their shows?
Yeah, because I knew it was only three sets. Well, I also knew we were only playing three shows with them, so I wanted to see what it was all about. And yeah, I did. I watched those because I wanted to make sure I saw it.
I was always hoping that you guys would come out. And, like, usually, like Dave Matthews Band, a lot of times they bring out the opening act and
right.
jam with them. Like, did you guys ever talk about doing that at all or anything?
Well, actually, that did happen, except it was Dan, who was actually touring with us all that year, and then he went out and played saxophone with him. That bastard, he should have asked me.
No, that was awesome. Okay, when I saw you guys opened for Bare Naked Ladies in Chicago, during their set, they came out and they did a medley of all their old songs. And it reminded me a lot of last year when I saw you guys in Chicago and you did the Garbage Can medley.
They totally ripped us off. They ripped us off.
I was mad.
It's amazing. We've actually had a lot of parallel thoughts. Every time we're like, oh, have you guys ever seen this movie? And they're like, yeah, how'd you hear that movie? Like, there's always, we have a very similar sense of humor between bands, so we actually end up thinking a lot alike and having the same ideas, and they just happen to happen in parallel universes. So I don't think they ripped us off. I think they just came up with the same idea because we have the same sensibility.
Do you hang out with some headline bands more than others? Like, I remember reading Brian's Road Journal from opening for Bob Dylan. He was like, Bob Dylan walked past me today.
Yeah. Well, it depends on the band. I mean, a band like Bare Naked Ladies, they're normal guys, and we're normal guys, and we've known them actually for a few years, so it's been great. Like, this tour has been amazing. This is actually one of the first tours where we've been on the road with a band for over a month. So there's generally tends to be like a 1 week period where everyone's trying to respect each other's space and no one's actually talking to each other. And once that week goes by, then people really get to know each other. So we've gotten a lot of opportunity to hang out with the Bare Naked Lady guys, and they're awesome. And Dave we hung out with a bit too, just because we knew him from before as well.
All right. The Guster fans have some traditions. I was wondering if I could just list them off and maybe you could comment on each of them.
Okay, I'll be interested to hear your list.
Bubbles during either way.
Okay. Yes, they blow bubbles during either way.
You like it?
Yeah, I love that. All those things are great. I mean, again, that's sort of like, oh, they're ripping that off from Bare Naked Ladies, but it's because Bare Naked Ladies during if I had $1 million, they throw all the mac and cheese, and during Airport Song, they throw the ping pong balls, and yeah.
The jack off during Bury Me.
Jackals.
Yeah.
Is it?
Yeah, have you ever heard that? With the
people say jack off?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Oh, see, you're teaching me stuff. No idea.
How about when the crowd shouts dirty, dirty, oh so dirty, or your room is so dirty during Airport Song?
Yeah, that's great.
You like that song?
Yeah, all that's any time that the audience is screaming, when you have like 6,000 people screaming at you, that's great. Unless they're telling you to get off.
Yeah. How about your old songs? Any chance of hearing old stuff tonight? Like
tonight,
Garbage Can Medley, or maybe like, I don't know, the first Guster song I ever heard, Fall Into?
Definitely not Fall Into. That's the first song we ever wrote. And that's...
I love that song.
All right,
I
cool.
I adore that song.
Great. I'm glad you like it.
You
we're just tired of it. I mean, we've played it for so long, and it's sort of... Well, I'm trying to think what would be analogous to that situation. Like, if basically, if you know, do you guys have the freshman pig book? Do you guys have that here?
The dog book,
right. We call it the pig book at our school. It's as if someone was like, I really like this picture of you from sixth grade. Can I put that in that book?
Yeah.
It's sort of like, it's a snapshot of our past, which was a while ago. And we feel like we've sort of developed since then, since that song. But I think it's great that people still like it. That means there's something.
Still popping Parachute a lot.
I think we're gonna play Window tonight because there's actually someone from your school that plays violin, and they emailed us and they're like, hey,
the kid from Siegfried.
Yeah, they're like, hey, we go to Notre Dame and we want to, you know.
Oh, you're gonna have him up on stage,
yeah.
You guys.
And there's some guy that plays sousaphone too that I think is gonna come up.
I sure wrote him, be like, should I like stay on stage and play guitar with you guys and just stand him like the way back?
Guitars not allowed. Guitars aren't welcome. Any other instrument, we have the guitar.
It's a friendly competition.
We and we'll lose so.
Okay, during I Spy, the Numbers cover at the end, where'd that come from?
G-Love wrote it.
I'm a huge G-Love fan.
Yeah, we're friends with those guys.
Really?
Yeah,
really?
We've known them for a little while.
How do you know them?
We commiserated on that terrible Widespread Panic tour. It was us, them, and Widespread Panic, and we both had a miserable time.
Yeah.
Not, I mean, don't get me wrong, the Widespread Panic band was great, and their crews, everyone was friendly except for their fans. So we got to know them really well on that tour. And became friends with them and just liked that song. And we were messing around when we were rehearsing it. And we're like, hey. Because we never felt... Like, on the record, that song was written in the studio mostly. It wasn't a song that we had previously. So the way that song ends on the record sort of leaves you wanting more, I think. It's like, where's, is that the end? And then all of a sudden it goes into the next song. And live, you could really feel it, because people would just sort of pause, being like, is there more, or should I applaud now? So so we just added that to it, because it worked, and it was, and we liked, you know.
You're going to play it tribute. Tonight?
Yeah.
I hope you're the happiest person alive.
Yeah, definitely.
First time I heard that, I was like, oh my God, this is G-Lo. where did California Dreaming come from? It seemed like for a while you were playing that like almost every night.
It came from the Mamas and the Papas.
Like, what was the inspiration?
I wish we could say that we wrote that.
But that cover versus like, I don't know, Like a Prayer or something.
I've always been a fan of oldies music. I love oldies bands and their songs. I think there's a reason why people still listen to them today.
Yeah.
And we just listened to that song. We're like, God, this is such a great song. We just made a decision. We're like, let's do a cover of a song. But we've done the '80s thing. We've done the heavy metal thing. Let's do an oldie song and something that we all liked.
Will the Lionel Richie medley ever come back?
Never.
Never.
Never. It's dead.
That's
we an retired
MP3
it.
That everyone on this campus has.
Well, I'm glad it's an MP3 because that's all you'll ever. Yeah. You never know, but no, we've retired that for.
Speaking of MP3s,
while.
How do you guys feel about all that stuff?
I think it's great. I think the technology is amazing. I think it helps our band probably more than it hurts at this point. Bands like Metallica obviously are losing a lot of money. For us, I think we're gaining a lot of exposure. I don't necessarily think that our studio albums that we spend a lot of money and time on should be free to the public. But for the live stuff, that's great. We've always encouraged taping, and I think this only gets the music out there faster and our band out there. Like, we've built our band by word of mouth, and this only helps that cause. So I think it's great. I just hope that they figure out. So they need to figure out how to compensate the artists, because otherwise we're not going to be able to make another studio album because we won't have any cash to do it.
Speaking of your next studio album, when are you going to start working on it?
The Cyclist tour is over, actually. We're going to take...
Because Mike was saying something about a spring tour?
Just a month in April, okay. But we're going to take from December until April to write, and then we'll go out for a month in April, and we'll see where we're at with the writing. We want to, basically, the idea is to write songs, test them live, because that helps a lot.
Where's the tour going to be?
All over. We don't know. Hasn't even
House of Blues, maybe?
What's that?
Is it just going to be for the month of April, or are you guys going to go beyond?
I think it'll probably just be a 4 or 5 week tour in April.
Cool. With your next album, are you planning to work with Steve Lillywhite again?
He's definitely a possibility. We're gonna see. I mean, he was amazing. I loved him as a producer. I loved him as a person. I think he did a great job with the last record. But we're going to look around and just keep our options open. I think we're going to make a very different record than the last one, so we're going to try... We may try working with other people just because.
You're not going to work with Glenn Ballard, are you?
No.
Dave Matthews, they jumped off the Lillywhite bandwagon and went with Ballard now. And
I know. We actually heard that. We heard the Lillywhite record because we were in Virginia when they were recording it. We went to their studio.
Really?
And he played it back for us. I'll be interested to see how the Glenn record comes out, because our impression of the Lillywhite record was, God, this sounds so much like all their other stuff. And we were concerned. We're like, I don't know. You know, it sounded like Dave Matthews, but you can't make four albums that sound the same. And I think it was probably a wise decision for them to try someone else. We'll see what happens with Glenn Ballard, because he's a heavy-handed producer. He really changes the songs. Right? He co-wrote the songs with Dave Matthews, so I don't know what's going to happen with that. It'll be interesting.
Would you ever let a producer co-write songs with you guys?
Sure, if it happened in a way that was... Like, that actually happened on Goldfly. We had a producer co-write the lyrics to Airport Song. But that came out of necessity. It was like, he just happened to... Not necessity, really, but situation, circumstances. We needed lyrics. We had to record the vocal tomorrow. And it was that night, and we're like, oh my God, we need to think of lyrics. And I decided to buckle down, and he buckled down with me, and I'm glad he did. So... I don't know if we would necessarily go ahead of it and go, oh my God, we need co-writers. Because writing isn't really... I think writing's our strength. I think our weaknesses lie in arrangements or trying to do something beyond what our instrumentation is. And that's why we're really going to... I think we're focusing on that the next record. We're going to be using all sorts of instruments, not just guitars. And we're going to be starting... our songs, starting the writing process maybe on a keyboard or a harp or an oboe or whatever, to just sort of push the limits of what we've been doing.
Where'd the idea for the Casio keyboard drum machine come from?
We used to, when we were traveling around in a van, we would stop at yard sales everywhere, and we found a little cheesy Casio.
Yeah, own it.
Yeah.
Like, I know so many people have been like, I heard the song, they're like, I had that.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. So, you know, we just noodled around with it, and we're like, oh, this is cool, and just sort of built a song around that cheesy drum beat.
All right, this probably is not going to be interested, though. I just want to know because I play guitar and stuff. How's the whole thing work when you seem to play, like, all the bass lines and play rhythm line at the same time? Is that the processor?
I have a MIDI pickup. I used to just have an octave pedal. But I actually have a MIDI pickup on my guitar.
Yeah.
So I can set, because the advantage of that is I can set the octave, or first of all, I have an actual bass sound. So, like, on some songs, I'll set it to an upright bass, or I'll set it, it's a synthesizer, so it's whatever sound I want. Like on Mamas and Papas, it plays flute.
Yeah.
But it's hard. It's frustrating a little bit to me, because I can't just strum out a chord, because it'll be muddy as hell, because there's bass notes underneath there. So I have to think like a bassist and a guitarist at the same time, which is sometimes hard.
I think it gives your band a lot of original sound, though.
Yeah, well, we need, and it just helps with the low end. Otherwise, it'd be really thin.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I guess I just sort of took on that role because no one else was, and I felt the need for it.
Do you guys have?
I just had one or two questions.
Okay.
You guys tried an echo thing during I Spy and the Waterloo concert.
An echo thing.
Yeah, like where the words got repeated, kind of trailing.
Oh, okay. That was our sound engineer.
Oh, okay.
So yeah, just, we had nothing. I didn't even know that was happening.
Oh, okay.
Did you like it?
Yeah, it was. It was kind of cool, and I was like, oh, I wonder if they're gonna change around, work it with this. But
no, the sound engineer. You know, we give him license to do whatever he wants, and he's usually pretty tasteful with all that. So, whatever he, you know, an airport song he does a lot too. So he pans it left and right and does all these crazy noises. A lot of those noises are coming from him, not just us. So in a lot of ways, he's sort of the fourth member of the band.
And are you continually amazed by Brian and Ryan's talents? Like, Ryan especially, like, when he does the openings for, like, Bury Me and stuff, just the crowd goes nuts.
Yeah, people love that.
Yeah.
It's great. It's amazing. I think the first time I really, because I never get to watch him play. I never see what it looks like, which is, it's a very visual thing.
Yeah.
And it was actually this last record when we were recording for I Spy, because that what you hear there is just one take of him just playing everything all at once, where a lot of times, you know, he'll sit there and play just one drum, then he'll overdub another shaker or whatever. And that was the first time I got to watch him play. I was like, wow, this is cool. No wonder people are freaking out. I've never, like, that was the first time, like, 5 years later, I got to turn around and see what he looked like.
Yeah. He seemed like he had a lot more input on Lost and Gone Forever as opposed to the other two albums.
I think not having a kit drummer, like having some studio guy come in and just play drums on top of what he was doing, freed him up tremendously. And I think that was Lily White's big distinction, you know, as far as this record versus the other records we've recorded with other producers, is he knew how to capture what we were doing live and didn't see any need to have these studio guys come in. He's like, you guys know your songs, you guys have your energy, no other musician that we hire off the streets is going to have that. I mean, of course, we had Tony Levin come in and play a couple of songs, you know, but that was actually situational. That was totally situational. He was in the grocery store with Lily White at the same time. He was like, Tony, I see. They haven't seen each other since they worked on Peter Gabriel together. And they're like, what are you doing in town? Oh, I'm with Guster. And then Tony's wife was like, oh, I know Guster. And, you know, he came in and recorded some songs.
Thank you very much for your time.
No problem.
Yeah, thanks a lot.
Thanks for waiting. Sorry to keep you all.